Blog Talk Radio.
Yeah, what is going on tonight, everybody, and welcome to What's Your Fantasy, hour number 4.5 of Smash Mouth Wednesdays here on the award-winning Fantasy Sports Channel. That's right, guys, taking home 2 awards at the Fantasy Sports Trade Association Awards a few weeks ago, taking home the Best Podcasting Award and Best New Improvement to a Website or Best New Website at the awards. So 2 awards for the Fantasy Sports Channel in just our 2nd year, and me and Ray are taking full credit for that, and we're welcoming him into the show now. Mr. Raymond Summerlin, what's going on, Ray? We're pretty much they rode our coattails to those awards, right?
This place would be falling apart without the greatness that is What's Your Fantasy. There's no doubt about it.
So one of the first shows on the channel, Mark got a hold of us, and we're taking full credit. So maybe it's not deserved, but we're going to take it anyways. But, guys, we've got a very big show planned for tonight, and we're going to jump right into it and let you guys know first up on the program. Well, later on we're going to have Scott Carter from the Tampa Tribune and WFLA-TV in Tampa, Florida. He's going to come on and talk a little bit about the South Florida Bulls NFL draft prospects, guys like Jason Pierre-Paul and Nate Allen. He's also going to spend some time talking about the men's basketball team's tournament chances. We'll also have Gerald Goodrich from OKBlitz.com to talk some Oklahoma and Oklahoma State draft prospects, as well as their men's basketball team's chances for the tournament. But first, we're going to he was so popular in his first appearance on What's Your Fantasy, we had to have him back, and that's the director of college scouting for the National Football Post, Wes Bunting. And, Wes, thanks for joining us again, man, to talk some NFL draft.
Hey, thanks for having me on.
Hey, no problem, man. I've been reading all of your articles that you've had on up at National Football Post over the last few weeks, all your position rankings and everything else, and I saw that your first mock draft came out, and if you guys want to check that out, they can just head to nationalfootballpost.com, look for scouting department, and you can click right on that. And before I get into some of the players on the list, Wes, I had a question for you, because when I was reading this, I think it answers some questions that I had about some of the players, where you had them. When you make out your mock draft, basically, are you predicting who you think each team is actually going to take, or who they should take based on your draft grades?
No, I'm trying to figure out what teams will take. This has nothing to do with who I would take or anything like that. It's what I think ends up going down on draft times, you know, based on, you know, we know certain teams, like certain players, what they look for. We know with Mike Holmgren what he likes to do, what Al Davis likes to do in Oakland. So I kind of base my needs on that way, and that's how I put my mock draft together.
So basically this is what you think that these teams are actually going to do. Maybe not. Maybe some guys a little higher or lower than you think they should personally be, just what you think the actual owners are going to do when it comes to their time on the clock.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, when I put my first mock draft together, we're talking February, and a ton of things can happen right now. So it's kind of a crapshoot right now, but it's fun to start off at. You know, we'll see where we get to in April, but it was a fun first stab, a bit of a stab in the dark. I will admit that, because no one knows what's going to happen from now to the combine, to pro days, but it gets people reading, it gets people talking, it gives me a first step. So it's always fun.
Well, there's no doubt about that. I saw you had a lot of comments about your draft article. It seems like you start talking draft and people get all excited. And self-admittedly, I'm a San Francisco 49ers fan, and that's where I'm going to start just because of one thing, and that's Joe Hayden, who you have them taking, the cornerback out of Florida. You have him going 13th to the 49ers. That's really the farthest that I've seen him fall in any mock draft. You then have them taking Chad Jones, the safety out of LSU, with their 2nd first-round pick, which is number 16, and that's kind of a lot higher than I've seen him going. So why do you think Hayden's going to drop to the 49ers, and why do you have Jones going so much higher than other mocks I've seen?
Well, first off, with Hayden, I mean, I think he's the top corner in this year's draft, and it wouldn't surprise me if he goes early to the Cleveland Browns, I believe, at 7. I think he could find a home there. But when you look at so much talent in this year's draft, and I always harp about the talent, especially upon the offensive and defensive line. Those guys, they're not dime a dozen players. It's tough to find guys like Gerald McCoy, like Ndamukong Suh, like Anthony Davis, like Brian Beloga. So you're going to see those offensive and defensive linemen, those guys in the trenches, they're going to be the ones, those top tier guys that are going to come off the board early. And since there's an abundance of them, I think with that first top 10 picks, you're going to see a bunch of offensive and defensive linemen taken. Now, that's not to say Joe Hayden couldn't, you know, be that guy number seven or whatever for the Cleveland Browns, but I just think there's going to be a run early on offensive and defensive linemen, possibly push Hayden back a bit. And if you see a team that does need help in the secondary, I'd give Eric Berry a little bit higher of a grade than him, and I think if a guy comes off from the secondary, it'll be Eric Berry and not Joe Hayden. As for Jones, this guy, 6'3", 230 pounds from LSU, he's a junior, not getting a ton of love right now because people haven't seen him, but the more we see him at the combine, at his pro day, more people are going to start talking. This is one of the most talented safeties in the country. I have him ranked as the top strong safety prospect, second overall safety prospect behind Eric Berry. The guy runs extremely well for 6'2", 230 pounds, extremely fluid, can ball hawk, can come up, be as that extra linebacker at the line of scrimmage, has a tendency to get caught ball watching at times, will take himself out of the plays, but he's only a junior. He is a baseball player as well, so he hasn't had a ton of time to contribute all his time to the football field. If he's given that opportunity, I think he could be an impact caliber ball hawk in the secondary.
I think one of your most interesting picks I see on here is the New England Patriots taking Javid Best at 22. It's interesting to me for a couple reasons. The first one is that the New England Patriots would, you know, spend a first-round pick on a running back, something that seems so out of character for them. And then also that you have Best going before C.J. Spiller. I was wondering if you could tell me a little bit about maybe you think, do you think New England's going to change positions, change, you know, kind of how they feel about things? And do you think Best is a better back than C.J. Spiller?
Well, we'll touch on New England first. I mean, they have needs. Defensive front seven, they need a five technique. They need pass rushers. And very easily, Ricky Sapp as a pass rusher from Clemson could go there. Jared Odrick from Penn State, the five technique that they need. But they took a guy, Lawrence Maroney, a couple of years in the first round. So they're not, you know, scared to take talented players in the first round at the skill position. But if you look at the New England Patriots backfield, the one word that comes to mind, it's just blah. It doesn't give you much. And you put so much pressure on Tom Brady and Randy Moss and Wes Welker. They need someone that can be dynamic from the gun at the running back position. I think a guy like Javid Best, you put him in space. You can flip him the ball outside. You get him in, you know, with the ball in his hands. The guy can be dynamic in the open field. And when they're consistently going from their zebra formations with three wide, I think he'd be so tough to defend Best. And now we talk with Best and Spiller. Best was arguably the best running back in the nation before the concussion injuries. He's put on some weight this year, was absolutely brilliant in the early part of the season against Maryland, against Pac-10 competition. He's one of them. I have him as the number two back in the nation behind Jonathan Dwyer. I think he can put on even a little more weight, get up to 205, 5'10", runs low, can explode in the open field. I like C.J. Spiller a lot, too. I think he'd be a great fit in New England. I just think Best, a little more explosive, a little more dynamic when healthy. That's not taking anything away from Spiller. My personal opinion, I just like Best a little bit more.
All right, well, for those of you guys just tuning in, you're listening to What's Your Fantasy on the Fantasy Sports Channel with Jared Farrien and Raymond Sumlin, and special guest, the director of college scouting from the National Football Post, Wes Bunting. Wes, C.J. Spiller is actually the next guy I wanted to talk to you about because you've got him going 28 to the Chargers. You know, I've seen him getting a lot earlier than that, Seattle at 14, San Francisco at 16, and that's what I just was wanting to know. You kind of talked about it, why you like Dwyer more than Spiller, but could you see San Francisco – you know, curing two problems at once with that, getting a change of pace back? Because realistically, you know, they've got Gore there who's been hurt, and then I don't know why as a San Francisco fan, I can't think of the guy that's backing him up there. Coffee. Yeah, he's almost kind of the same type of player as Gore. So C.J. Spiller could give him that fast change of pace back as well as helping them out on the special team, something they need. So do you think San Francisco, when they have – you know, these two first-round picks, 13 and 16, so close together that if maybe a guy that they don't like is there, maybe they could take Spiller to try to, you know, because it's kind of a, I don't want to say a luxury pick because he's still a good player, but, you know, because they've got two first-round picks, it can kind of maybe let them go, you know, on both sides of the ball with their picks if they do decide to go defense with the first one?
Well, I think it's a good thought, honestly, because I don't think Spiller's a guy that you want carrying the ball 20, 25 times. Everyone's comparing and makes that Chris Johnson comparison. Well, first off, there's only one Chris Johnson in the NFL, and that's Chris Johnson, so I don't want to compare him to Chris Johnson at all. I think Spiller's more of a Felix Jones type back. He can help you out in the return game. He can help you out on third down. You run some draws with him. You give him 10, 15 carries a game. You let him help out in the return game, throw a couple bubble screens, and let him help out that way. So I think if you have a seasoned back like a Frank Gore, Spiller will be that much more effective. He's not a guy that the more carries he gets, the more effective he'll be. You give him 10, 15, I think that's the way to go. So I do agree. I think it's a bit of a luxury pick, though, for San Francisco, and I think there's some other backs in this year's draft, Michael Smith from Arkansas, LaMarcus Coker, some later round guys that can be those third down type of backs that they need that can also help out in the return game. But if you get a chance, if San Francisco has needs in the secondary at offensive tackle, and if you get to a position where they're not there, it doesn't hurt to take the best player available. And if that's C.J. Spiller, so be it. He's going to find a way to improve your team and your offense in some way.
I see that you have Jimmy Clausen at 4 going to the Redskins. I'm assuming that means you think, like most people think, that Jason Campbell's out at Washington. But the thing about Jimmy Clausen, does he have all the skills that he needs to play in Washington, or is this going to be, you know, another disappointment for Washington? Because, frankly, you know, I've watched a lot of Notre Dame games, and it just seems like there's something missing with Jimmy Clausen.
Yeah, I agree with Clausen, and I wouldn't, you know, say that Jason Campbell's done this year in Washington. I think he believes he has 1 year left on his contract. It's pretty cheap, so it's not a bad thing to keep Jason Campbell for this 1 year, let him get the snot beat out of him all year, and then, you know, keep Clausen safe on the sideline behind that patchwork offensive line, let Campbell go next year when he's a free agent, then bring Clausen in. Clausen, yeah, I agree. The guy's never won a big game in his life. He's played marginal competition all year. I did a study. I believe the best pass-off defense he faced all year was Pittsburgh, which was the 40th-ranked pass defense in the entire country. He played Washington, Washington State, Stanford, all teams outside the top 100 in pass defense. Great wide receivers, great weapons around him. Again, never won the big game. There seems like there's something missing in that intangibles factor, that leadership capability. Plus, he's undersized and doesn't have the strongest of arms. With Mike Shanahan, though, in Washington, D.C., I think they do a great job with Shanahan's offense being able to boot and get him outside the pocket away from pressure where he's able to have a clean throwing lane and consistently being able to step into throws when he has to go down the field. Strong suits of his game, smart guy, accurate, gets the ball out on time. So you know he's going to be able to dink and dunk in the short and intermediate pass game. But when they have to go down the field, that's when they like to work off play action and go vertical, get him outside the pocket. So in that aspect, I think it would be a great fit for Washington because the weakness of Jimmy Clausen would be covered up pretty well by what Shanahan wants to do.
One thing, too, I want to ask you about real quick, Wes, is that you had an article you posted yesterday about small school prospects to kind of pay attention to. And a guy I kind of keep coming back to, and I keep using the phrase that I'm kind of being seduced by size, but that's John Skelton, the quarterback from Fordham, 6'5", 244 pounds. His size, his arm strength really intrigue me, and I like the fact that you have him ranked ahead of guys like Mike Kafka and Dan LeFever, who a lot of people are liking, and Nichols from Northwestern State and all these guys. But I really like Skelton, and maybe it's, like I said, I'm getting seduced by size, but I think you have him graded out as, you know, in that Colt McCoy, Tebow range there with Skelton. I mean, he's a project, but tell me why you like Skelton and you advise people to just kind of keep an eye on this guy.
Well, one, he's one of the few quarterbacks in this year's draft class with an NFL caliber starting skill set. He's not a guy like a Dan LeFever, like a Kafka, like a Canfield, whose ceiling at the next level is a guy that has to hold a clipboard and be, at the best case scenario, a backup number two guy. If Skelton develops and hits his potential, he's got the ability to start in the NFL as a starting quarterback. The guy has all the throws, was absolutely unleashing missiles all over the East-West Shrine game. Big, tall, physically strapping kid. Now, he's raw with his footwork. He's still learning how to decipher information. He's never had to read a defense at the 1AA level, consistently able to stare down his target and just fit the ball into tight areas. But this is a guy with the skill set to come in and you're not looking for him to play next year, even 2 years from now, but 3-4 years down the road, if you give him a chance to be in an NFL system with NFL coaching, this guy has as much upside as anyone in the draft with the physical skill set. We could be talking about this guy being, you know, a legit NFL starter down the line. Reminds me a bit of a poor man's Joe Flacco at this stage. Just needs some time to develop.
Ray, you got one more question for Wes before we let him go?
Yeah, there was some news that came out this week that, as I'm a Titans fan, and to me it's surprising, is that the Titans haven't even really talked to Keith Pulick about renewing his contract. I know he's coming off a knee surgery, but, you know, they're probably not bringing VandenBosch back. It looks like they're not bringing Bullitt back. Losing those two pieces of their defense, does that change your mind any on what you think they're going to do with their first pick in the draft?
Well, they need to. I think what they need to do is address that defensive line right away. I mean, whether that's a defensive end, a guy like Derek Morgan, Jason Paul, or Pierre Paul, whether it's defensive tackle, Brian Price, they need a difference maker inside. They have a bunch of good players, but it's amazing what happens when you lose an elite player like an Albert Haynesworth. Now, are they going to get an Albert Haynesworth with that pick? No, but they need to continue to improve the defensive line up front, add talent around that. I think second, third round is a better place to address outside linebacker. Sean Weatherspoon, Darryl Washington make some sense. Run and hit linebackers that can flow to the football. But first round, I think the Titans need to go defensive line, find a perennial Pro Bowl type player, an impact defensive lineman that can have his way, consistently win his one-on-one matchups, and wreak havoc on first, second, and third down.
Well, hey, Wes, listen, man, we appreciate you spending some time with us tonight. We'll try to get you back in a couple of weeks leading up to the draft if you've got time. But we had one quick shout-out from our chat room that's going on right now. And if you guys want to jump in there, it's www.fsc.fm. There's a one Mr. Cecil Lammy saying that you owe him lunch at Hooters. You got any response for Mr. Lammy?
Well, I was going to throw Cecil under the bus, but this guy, I mean, one of the hardest working guys at the East-West Shrine game, and I worked down there with him. Great guy, and I apologize to Cecil. This guy, I tried to have lunch with him twice at the East-West Shrine and at the Senior Bowl. I promise, Cecil, I will get you at the Combine. We'll go out, we'll have some wings, have a good time. Cecil, you got to check him out, though. One of the best in the business.
Yeah, so Cecil Lammy, also on the Fantasy Sports Channel on Thursday nights. Him and his partner in crime, Sigmund Bloom, are going to be back at it again tomorrow night. And Cecil, just let me know the time there in the chat, and we'll be sure and plug that for tomorrow night on the award-winning Fantasy Sports Channel. But, hey, Wes, man, take care. I've enjoyed reading your stuff, and keep it up. And like I said, we'll get back to you to have you guys on another time, man.
Thanks a lot, man. Thanks for having me.
All right, well, that was Wes Bunting from the National Football Post, the director of college scouting, joining us, and we'll get him back on in the future leading up to the draft as he goes to the Combine and sees what's happened there. But we're going to take a quick break, and we're going to come back with Scott Carter from the Tampa Tribune, who covers the USF Bulls. We'll be back in just a minute after this short break. We'll be back with Scott Carter.
This fall, the Fantasy Sports Channel will make history
all over again
with even more live fantasy sports radio than anywhere on the planet. At least 12 hours of fantasy football, baseball, basketball, and hockey action each Monday through Friday. Plus more fantasy sports talk every Saturday and Sunday. More than 50 shows in all from the best fantasy sportscasters in the business.
Try getting that on your radio dial.
The Fantasy Sports Channel. Only on Blog Talk Radio. It's a schedule you can bet on.
All right, well, just to recap there, guys, Cecil saying his show starts at 10 p.m. Eastern time. That's 9 for you in the Central and 7 for you all on Pacific. So you guys can check that out tomorrow night, Cecil and Sigmund from Football Guys. But we're going to go to the phones now. Welcome in Scott Carter, who covers the University of South Florida's Bulls football and men's basketball team, as well as other things for the Tampa Tribune. And, Scott, how you doing tonight?
Hey, I'm doing good. How about you?
I'm doing well, man. We talked to you last Thursday about coming on the show. I know that South Florida's men's basketball had a couple of big games, Marquette this past weekend, and then they had Cincinnati last night that they were able to win. But we want to talk real quick, and I know you were on the phone, so you heard Wes talk about Jason Pierre-Paul, and as it's getting to be NFL draft season, we do a lot more football on the show than we do basketball. So I wanted to start with him, and for those of y'all don't know, we mentioned Scott. He covers the University of South Florida for the Tampa Tribune, TBO.com. You can read his blog, Shooting the Bull, and also for WFLA-TV in Tampa. Todd McShay from ESPN currently has Pierre-Paul as the fifth best player on his board, but I've seen him ranked anywhere from 17th to 30th in the first round on different mock drafts. What can you kind of tell us about Pierre-Paul and what kind of player he was for a guy that, you know, saw this guy play all of his games?
I mean, he's an incredible athletic player, and he's, you know, he's going to do well at the combine. These testings that the scouts really, really love to track. And I mean, he's skyrocketed his value has over the past, you know, couple of months. He made his mark at USF just in his 1 year there. Before then, he had played at a couple of small junior colleges, and he's actually a former basketball player in high school. He didn't really play much football, but he started out at this college out in California, College of the Canyons, went to junior college in Kansas, and then obviously got a lot more attention here at USF this year. And he's just a very athletic, long arm, lean athlete who, you know, the scouts love him, and he's probably going to be the highest draft pick USF has ever had in the draft.
And I think the thing with him that people were kind of knocking about, and you touched on it, is that he hasn't played a lot of football. People are wondering, you know, how he's going to make that transition. You know, he didn't play that much, and maybe he didn't play a superior level of competition. But I mean, for a guy that sees him every week, I mean, he's got the size. What do you know about him as a person that you know can that you can say with, you know, with conviction that you know this guy is going to be able to contribute at the next level? He's a good kid, or is he a guy that, you know, maybe he checks out once he gets a paycheck type of deal?
No, I think really he's just now starting to catch in on his potential. From my dealings with him, he's a nice kid, got a pretty good head on his shoulders. You know, his family's from Haiti. They moved to South Florida when he was young, and he's a kid, like I said, played basketball, didn't really, you know, wasn't around football a lot, and then he got onto the scene and obviously just taken off. I just see him, you know, fitting into the NFL. You know, you need to play the end position, or you might see a team move him to, you know, an outside linebacker, pass rush specialist type, because he has great speed, and I think he's only going to get stronger. He's about 6'5", 265 right now. And, you know, once, you know, as he gets older, I mean, he's only, what, 21, 22 years old. He's going to develop some more muscle and weight. So, I mean, he could be a force down the road. But I don't see him as a guy who, you know, catches out pretty early once he gets drafted. I think his best days are ahead of him.
Speaking of 3-4 outside linebackers, I think that's probably where George Selby is going to end up playing when he plays in the NFL. And I was just wondering, you know, I really haven't got a chance to watch many South Florida games this year. Does he have experience getting out in pass coverage? Is that the defensive scheme that they kind of ran, or did he spend most of his time running after the quarterback this year?
You know, they moved him back into that role some more this year. You know, he made his mark a couple years ago when he was first team All-American in 07, and he's kind of faded back since then. He's a guy who's actually sort of regressed. He has trouble keeping weight on. I mean, if he gets up to 245, 250, you know, that's big for him. And, you know, in the NFL, I do see, like you said, I see him more as a outside linebacker type speed rusher. I don't think he's big enough and has the strength to, you know, work the end position against a large offensive lineman that he'll face. But he's a guy, his stock's fall. I see him anywhere between a third and fifth round pick right now. But he's a guy who obviously the scouts like because, like Pierre Paul, he's very athletic and fast.
One more guy that I know on the football side of the ball, Nate Allen, the strong safety. I'm currently seeing him. He's probably the third, fourth safety going to be taken off the board, a second-round pick, 6'1", 205. I mean, I'm not sure if he's an underclassman or not. I didn't get that information, so maybe we don't have all the numbers on him. I mean, is he a fast guy? He's a slower guy. What can you kind of tell people about Nate Allen who may not know much about him? Because, you know, I know that South Florida's games aren't covered that big nationally, so what can you kind of tell people if they haven't seen Nate Allen, what kind of a player he's going to be?
He was a senior, so you know he's a four-year guy. He's a physical type safety, about 6'1", 205, 210. Good at pass coverage, but he's going to be more of a guy who lays some hits down instead of, you know, really a pass rush or a, you know, pass defender type. But he's a good player and a very smart kid. I think he's another guy. USF has about five defensive players who are being talked about in the draft, and he's probably going to be the second one picked behind Pierre Parra. And I've seen him, you know, most draft projections going second round, but he's another player, you know, physical, got some speed. So he's a guy who I can see making an impact in the NFL.
All right, well, we'll transition now, Ray. You got any more football questions before we move to basketball?
No, that's all.
All right. Well, we, you know, on this show, like I said, we're mostly fantasy football during the season. We kind of transitioned to draft and March Madness. We did a really big show last year with a lot of March Madness stuff, and we really enjoyed it. And I kind of wanted to get talk to somebody who covers South Florida. They're kind of a bit of a bubble team. They really could have been useful for them to pick up the win against Marquette the other night. But, you know, when they played Marquette, they did lose 63-52. They kind of had a bad shooting night in the second half, just 29.7%. The guy I want to talk to you about is Dominique Jones, and he's kind of went on a tear for a while there. I think he had 29 in a win at Georgetown, which is a big win for them. Then he scored 37 at home against Pittsburgh. But one thing I noticed in looking back in the losses at Notre Dame and at Marquette, 3 of 17 against Notre Dame, 6 of 21 against Marquette, but he only got to the line 8 times in those two games. The previous 4 games before the Notre Dame game, I saw he got to the line 64 times in 4 games. And then on Cincinnati, Tuesday against Cincinnati, I think he got to the line 12 times. So is what's going on with Jones where he seems to not be – I mean, is he not getting penetration? Is it game-calling stuff? Because he looks like a really good player that could carry South Florida deep in the – you know, and you only need one really solid player like him. What are kind of your thoughts on Jones, and why did he kind of struggle against Notre Dame and Marquette?
Well, like you said, he was on such a great tear there. I mean, he was leading the nation in scoring since the first of the year for about the first 9 or 10 games, averaging almost 30 points. And I think, you know, he's not a secret anymore. So in those games at Notre Dame and Marquette, they obviously paid extra attention to him defensively. And he really struggled, as did the team. I mean, he's clearly the leader of the pack for the Bulls basketball team. But then last night you saw when they beat Cincinnati, he did get back to the line. He was 10 of 12 out of the line and had 26 points on just 12 shots. So it kind of got back on his game, and they got a big win. But, I mean, yeah, if USF does end up squeaking here into the tournament, he's going to be the guy who's going to carry them there. He's very physical. He can create his own shot. He's a pretty good three-point shooter too, but one thing he's going to have to deal with, you know, teams are obviously going to be focusing on him more now, and he's going to have to find ways to get his points like he did last night.
Now, the other thing
I was looking at the games they've been playing, I've noticed that Augustus Gilchrist has been out for a while, right? And then Jared Famous is also hurt as well. Both those guys are going to be back for the next game. Is that correct?
Yeah, Gilchrist, he's been back a couple of games. He missed over 2 months with an ankle injury, but he's a guy who really is probably their second-best offensive player behind Jones. He's still kind of trying to fit back into the rotation because they had all their success without him. They kind of, you know, developed a new identity, and now they're trying to fit him back in. And then Jared Famous, he's their starting center. He missed the first game of the year last night with a knee sprain, and they do expect him back Saturday against St. John's, which, you know, is obviously a big game for them. If they're going to continue to try to, you know, squeak into the tournament. This is something that, talking about March Madness down here about USF basketball, is kind of odd. They haven't made the tournament since 1992 and only twice in their 39-year history. So, you know, basketball has got a few people excited down here right now.
Well, and that's what I'm going to ask you about with the tournament. If this team makes the tournament, let's say they make a really good run in their conference tournament and, you know, they can win out on the schedule, and we'll see how they do. But what do you think the ceiling for this team is? You know, because I talked about, especially in this day and age where, you know, so many players are one and done, or that, you know, you've even got guys now choosing to go play in Europe rather than go to college for 1 year, so you can have a lot more parity. What do you think, you know, with one guy like Dominique Jones can really kind of carry your team? We've seen guys, I mean, Dwayne Wade is obviously a better player than Dominique, but, I mean, you know, he carried Marquette, I think it was to the Elite Eight the year that he was there, and, you know, we saw what Carmelo Anthony did with Syracuse, carrying them to a national title, had some good players around him. But if they make the tournament, what do you think South Florida's, I know it depends on their draw, but what do you kind of think their ceiling is? Is this a team that can, you know, make it to 32 and be happy, or could they really get, you know, on a hot streak behind Jones and maybe make a run at the Sweet 16 or even further?
Yeah, I mean, I see them as a dangerous team. I mean, I think people really started to look at them in a different light over the past month. Once they kind of got into the Big East play, they lost their first 4, but then they won 5 out of 7, and it's kind of just changed the perception of the program. And you know, as far as their upside, I mean, they're just a team, like you said, if Jones can get hot and carry the team and Gilchrist adds something to the mix of Famous, you have 3 good college basketball players that, you know, you can build around for the role players. And a team like that can do some some dangerous things in the tournament. And, you know, it's going to be kind of fun to see how it plays out, but they still have five Big East games left. And as you guys know, it's probably the toughest conference in the country this year. So it's hard to say how it's going to play out yet.
And, you know, I want to get your thoughts, too, on this, because I heard Boeheim talk about this, and me and Ray actually talked a little bit about it last week. The thoughts of the NCAA tournament might expand to from 64 to 68 with four play-in games, or they'd make the big jump from 64 to 96. And I was kind of thought that was a little stupid when I heard it, but Boeheim on the Dan Patrick show today made a lot of really good points about, you know, you get teams that get hot in the season that maybe got off to a cold start, like you're talking about with South Florida. But he also said, you know, you have these smaller conferences that'll have a team that'll win the regular season title, but then you have another team that'll win the conference tournament. The team that wins the conference tournament gets in, because traditionally they're a one-bid conference. But this would kind of just expand it, because his thinking is if you have just a first round of 32 to get it down to 64, you get the best 64 teams in the tournament, because there are teams. He said, you know, there's a lot of teams this year that are going to be 20-10 or 21-9, and they're not going to get in. How do you make the distinction between a team that's 22-10 versus a team that's 21-9? Because one of them's going to get in and the other's not. I mean, obviously, if the tournament was expanded this year, South Florida would be in for sure. But I kind of tend to agree with you. You know, a team that went to Georgetown and beat them, Pittsburgh, they're kind of a dangerous team. And unless they went out and possibly get some help and make a deep run, they're going to be on the outside looking in. So, I mean, where do you think – do you think if the tournament went from 64 to 96, that's too much? Or do you think it'd be really cool to see more teams, you know, get in and have a shot at making the final game?
You know, I mean, that's a great question. I'm pretty open to the idea of going to 96. I love March Madness. I love the drama that it involves. And, you know, the more teams, the merrier is kind of my view. Now, obviously, a lot of coaches are for it because, you know, it gets their teams in. It also maybe adds some job security for them and, you know, adds money to their programs. But I know a lot of people are, you know, more traditionalists and they already think 64 is enough. But, yeah, a team like, you know, there's going to be some good teams just from looking at the Big East. There's going to be some good teams that will not make the tournament this year because it's just such a logjam after Syracuse at the top and then Villanova. I mean, Georgetown, Pittsburgh, you know, USF, St. John, Cincinnati, all these teams are kind of middle of the pack, Marquette. So, I mean, you know, they're not going to get 10 or 11 teams in, obviously, but if they were 96, maybe they do, you know. But it's going to be an interesting debate as we go on here because it's something that's gaining some traction right now, I think, with the powers that be. And, you know, I would love to see more teams in it because I love the tournament.
Ray, you got anything else for Scott before we let him go?
Well, I look at, you know, as I'm looking down their schedule, they're playing St. John's. That's a game I think they could win. They play at Villanova. It's obviously rough. Play at home with Providence, play at DePaul, and play home versus Connecticut. I kind of see them winning four of those games and winning that game at home against Connecticut because Connecticut, you know, just seems to be falling apart at the seams. You know, they win four games. They maybe win a game in the Big East tournament. Does that get them in? Do you think that's you know, winning those five games, will that get them into the tournament?
Yeah, I think if they won four of their last five and win a game in the Big East tournament, I think they're definitely in. After the game last night, Stan Heath was saying that, you know, if they finished – they're 6-7 right now in the Big East with five to go. He thinks if they finish 9-9, that would be 3-2 in their last five. But they need to do some work in the Big East tournament. He feels if they finish 10-8, you know, winning four of their last five, they're going to get in regardless of how they do in the tournament. And, you know, I think, you know, they may have a little extra pull in the fact that if they were to go, you know, 9-9, you know, they haven't been there so long. Maybe that weighs in on selection committee's mind. You know, I don't know. You just never know how some of those last teams are chosen, but you know, the fact that they have a chance and that we're even talking about this, it's pretty hard to believe because this is a program that going into this year had played in the Big East. This is their fifth year. They were 11-57 all time in Big East play in their first 4 years, and this year they have six conference wins, so they definitely upgraded the program.
One more thing before we let you go, Scott. And, again, you're listening to What's Your Fantasy on the Fantasy Sports Channel with Jared Free, Raymond Summerlin, and special guest Scott Carter joining us from the Tampa Tribune. Dominique Jones, in one of the articles you read in your blog, Shooting the Bull with Scott Carter, I read that Dominique had said that, you know, he might stick around because he really wants to kind of give back to USF for bringing him in and making him a player? I mean, how much of that is – I always remember – the one thing I always go back to when these college players talk about coming back is I always go to Carmelo Anthony when they were getting their national title stuff at Syracuse, and I remember him saying, "You guys are staying one more year. I thought you were supposed to stay in school for four," and kind of laughed his way out of the arena as he went to the NBA like the next day. So I don't really put too much stock into, you know, when these guys talk about coming back, because once that money's on the table, you know, not to stereotype anybody, but a lot of these guys don't come from, you know, financially affluent families. So once that money's on the table and they feel like they're gonna get paid and a chance to go on to the next level, they typically leave. I mean, what are the odds you put on Dominique coming back to USF if they miss the tournament? Because I know he kind of predicated it based on he wanted to try to make a run and put USF on the map.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I kind of agree with you. I don't put much stock in what these guys say either. I do feel that, you know, he's a guy who I feel like right now is probably – there's a better chance of him staying than leaving regardless of how they do. Now, if they made a deep run, he gets more hype, his draft stock soars, you know, made that changes everything. But right now, he's a 6'4 shooting guard. He doesn't handle the ball great, so it's kind of he's a tough guy to project in the NBA. He's very physical, creates his own shots, and has a lot of ability. He'll definitely be on the NBA roster, but I don't see him being a lottery pick regardless of how they finish. So that, I think that might lean toward him coming back. But at the same time, it all comes down, like you said. I mean, somebody, all it takes is one team to say they really want him, make him, you know, draft him, and, you know, we'll see how that goes. But it's a good question, and one the USF fans are obviously going to be paying a lot of attention to.
Well, Scott, listen, man, we appreciate you spending some time with us tonight, and I have one thing I've always enjoyed about doing this show is when I get ready to have people on, you almost become a new fan of a new team when you start to read about the team and what they've been going through and their players and everything else. So I'm kind of, I don't want to say a closet Bulls fan, but I've definitely been rooting for them over the past few nights, even though I kind of like Marquette as well. I was rooting for them the other night, and it was fun to watch them get a win against Cincinnati, another team that I have a soft spot for just because every time I bet them in football, they make me a happy man. So I've got all these weird allegiances to different teams based on what they've done for me in betting and stuff like that. So I haven't bet on South Florida because I don't want to be upset or disappointed, but I do hope they make the tournament, and it'll be fun to watch because Dominique, like you said, he's a scorer. He creates his own shot. He's a fun guy to watch. So hopefully they can make a run in the tournament, and we may get you back on to talk about their chances at advancing once they get there, man.
All right, guys. Well, thanks for having me. Enjoyed it. I'll start checking out your old show.
Hey, and Scott, real quick, just one time, if people want to get a hold of your stuff, they can go to tbo.com. I've tweeted out a couple times your Twitter account there, but where do people need to go if they want to, you know more about the Bulls and keep up with what you write and stuff?
Yeah, I mean, tbo.com/sports/colleges, and then you'll find the USF coverage there. But, you know, Tampa Bay Online, that's the home online home of the Tampa Tribune. So tbo.com is the best route to take. And, you know, we welcome any of the new readers we can get.
Well, hey, Scott, thanks so much for joining us, man. And tell the guys there good luck to them if they make the tournament, man.
You guys take care.
All right. That was Scott Carter joining us from the Tampa Tribune from TBO.com. You can check his stuff out there if you guys want to. We're going to take a quick break again. When we come back, we're going to be talking to Gerald Goodridge from OKBliss.com, talk a little Oklahoma and Oklahoma State football and basketball side of things. But until then, we'll be right back on the other side with Gerald Goodridge after this short break.
You're listening to Smash Mouth Wednesdays.
And Planner picked him up and crushed him.
The Fantasy Exchange.
He just brings such instant value.
The Thunder and Blurred Football Show.
Seriously, people, this is what you're upset about? Settle down.
And what's your fantasy?
You don't know about me being straight gangsta.
His mama raised him in the dirty south, so you best watch your mouth.
Every Wednesday, we crush the competition and make sure you're ready to do the same with your fantasy matchup.
The cat's out of the bag.
That is by far my favorite drop we have, because you don't know about me being straight gangsta.
All right, well, a lot of guests tonight. It's something new for us, but we're having a good time with it, and we're going to go to the phones now. And Ray, I'll let you introduce this guy. Ray secured this guy for us, and a near and dear friend of Ray's who's moved on to better and bigger things. So, on the phones now, Mr. Gerald Goodridge. I'll let Ray introduce his former partner in crime here.
My dear friend Gerald Goodridge, who does in fact know about me being straight gangster, from OKBlitz.com. Welcome to the show, Gerald. How's it going?
Doing all right, Raymond. How are you doing, sir, more importantly?
Lovely, because Dirk Nowitzki and Grant Hill almost just came to fisticuffs. It was quite humorous to watch.
That would have been the lankiest fist fight in the history of man, if I do say so myself.
would have been interesting. But how's it going tonight?
It's going great. Out here in Ada, Oklahoma, actually, I just got done watching my wonderful girlfriend do a dress rehearsal for her play tomorrow, so I'm in a good mood because she's crazy talented. I'm a little down in the dumps because Texas dropped another one, but I've kind of gotten used to it the past couple days, so doing all right with that.
Well, for a guy being from Texas like I am, I'm the one person who hates like everything Texas except for Texas Tech. So there's so many burnt orange shirts around here when they're winning, and not so many when they're losing. So it's one less ugly burnt orange shirt I have to see tomorrow since they lost.
Yeah, I come from the most fair weather fan base that's out there, but I still love my horns. But I'm actually the Oklahoma guy now, so that's it's a new thing for me being one state to the north. It's an interesting experience to say the least.
Well, the first thing we wanted to get into is talking a little bit about Oklahoma State basketball. We just talking a little bit about South Florida. Oklahoma State's kind of in the same position South Florida in. They're a bubble team. They've got some good wins on their resume. They've got some bad losses on their resume. But it seems like they have a run here. They have Baylor coming up. They're at Texas, a team that's obviously struggling a little bit. Home against Kansas, probably not going to do much with that. At Texas A&M, another tough one. And then got Nebraska at home. You know, if they win three of those games, they're definitely in. But, you know, they could lose four of those games and really hurt their chances. I know they're not playing exceptionally well, even though they beat Iowa State tonight. So it's going to be a rough haul for Oklahoma State. How do you think they're going to finish this year?
It's tough. I think the best thing that happened for them, they play great at home, and they get Kansas at home. Texas and Austin is really tough for them. They lucked out. They're on a bad run there for three straight games. They dropped three straight, and then they caught Oklahoma without Willie Warren, who was ill, and a freak suspension for Tiny Allen. Like, nobody knew about it until probably 10 minutes before the game. So they caught them at a good time. And then they caught Iowa State, and Obi Minella just went off tonight, 31 points from a guy who's averaging somewhere in the range of like 12 a night. So it's taken a perfect storm of things to get them back in the hunt. I think they'll probably win at least two out of the next few and still kind of sit on the bubble going into the selection show. I mean, it's tough to say they're going to beat Kansas because nobody really does. And Texas and Austin say what you want about their recent struggles, but they do play well in front of the home crowd.
Well, yeah, Gerald, it brings up an interesting point because when we talked about this with Scott just a minute ago about the NCAA talking about possibly expanding the tournament to get more teams in, either going to 68 with the four play-in games or to go all the way up to full-blown 96. And me and Ray talked about this a couple of weeks ago. I actually thought it was kind of a stupid idea, but Jim Boeheim, the coach of Syracuse, was on Dan Patrick's show today, and he made a really good case for it, I thought, in the fact that, you know, he talks about all these teams, that there's a lot of really good teams that are going to finish 21-9, finish 20-8, and, you know, some of the teams that are 21-9 are going to make it over a team that's 20-8. So, I mean, in Oklahoma State, good team, has some impressive wins, but had a few bad losses, and, you know, when it comes down to it, it's going to be really hard, I think, for the selection committee this year. I mean, last year it felt like a pretty, you know, we knew North Carolina was really good. We thought Louisville was pretty good, Michigan State, and that was kind of it. This year it feels like it's wide open. There's a ton of teams that could win, and yet you're going to have teams like Oklahoma State. You're going to have teams like South Florida that may not get in, but yet they've beat some impressive programs. I mean, what do you think about the possibility of them expanding the tournament? You think that's good for college basketball, or you think it's bad?
I guess it depends on what school of thought you're from. If you're from the school of thought of TV contracts and money, then by all means expand it, get more people in the seats for games, get more people tuning in to whoever's going to carry the tournament. I personally think it's a great chance. I mean, you never know who's gonna be that Cinderella team with the field that they have now, and if they expand it, I mean, a team catches fire late and could win a play-in game and go all the way to the Elite Eight, Final Four. You've seen it before. I think it gives more chances to the schools that are still trying to develop their program a little bit, get a lot more exposure if you expand it, just so the talent evens out. You know, all the talent seems to still go to the same four or five schools in each conference, much less the nation. So I think that more exposure for schools is a great idea. More exposure for the tournament is another great idea because schools are just going to keep getting money off those contracts. I personally don't see why they wouldn't at least expand it to have, you know, the four play-in games.
Yeah, I think the thing about that is, you know, they're going to expand it, and when do you stop? I know that college football has half of their teams playing in you know, bowl games, and if you expanded it,
LumberLiquidHitters.com bowl.
Exactly. And if you expanded it out to the 96, I think is what they want to expand it to, if you expand it out that far, then, you know, you wouldn't even be at half your team. So there's the precedent there in the NCAA for having that many teams go to the postseason, and they would probably end up doing away with the NIT. It just seems like that's a lot of teams to have come into the NCAA tournament, and it kind of ruins the talk that we're doing now. You know, is Oklahoma State going to make it? They have five huge games coming up. They need to win at least two of those games to even stay in the hunt and hope, you know, that they can pull something out of their hat and win three. You know, if that's not the case, if they have that, you know, those extra 32 teams, we're not even talking about this. They're in already. And so I think that, you know, but of course we'd have other teams we'd be talking about, but it's still, it's interesting to have the 64, and I kind of like it, but of course I'm 65 inside and I don't much like change, and that could certainly be where this is coming from.
This is true, because Ray is still whining about the fact that they're changing the NFL draft, which I actually think is going to be for the better.
I am still pissed off about that.
I was pissed when they changed it the first time. I used to blog about the draft, and you had to change your whole nomenclature when they added those extra days, because a first day guy is no longer first, second, or third round. He's now first round only. So for media guys like us, it's kind of a pain because you have to relearn. It's the same thing with changing to FBS from 1A and 1AA.
Yeah, I think it's going to be one of those things, though, talking about the NFL draft and them changing now. They're going to have the first round on Thursday in primetime, second round on Friday in primetime, then you'll have 3-7 on Saturday. I, when I first heard about it, I was kind of like, oh, that sucks, because you're not going to be able to have a big draft party on Saturday. But, you know, these past couple of years, they've been bumping it so far back anyways. It doesn't start till 3 or 4 in the afternoon anyways, so it's kind of like you're waiting all day on Saturday for it to start in the first place. You know, with this, I think it's actually going to be better for even casual people to watch it, because they're going to be able to watch it on Thursday. Then you got all day Friday to talk about it on sports talk radio and you know, get on message boards. And you'll have so much more time for trades to happen. And then you'll have the second round on Friday. And then you'll get the same thing again leading up to it on Saturday. You'll have time for trades and more discussion. I actually think it's going to be one of those things that people think that they're not going to like. But once it actually takes place and you get used to it, you're going to be like, you know what? You remember when the draft was on Saturday and Sunday, and people are going to be like, oh, that sucks. It's so much better now. But maybe I'll be wrong. We'll see what happens.
Your argument is the whole point that I think Roger Goodell's whole stay as the commissioner has been is trying to just increase the visibility from the non-hardcore fans. I mean, guys like me, guys like you two, are, you know, we'll watch the draft whenever it is. But he's always been trying to pull in the casual fan with the conduct stuff, trying to eliminate some of the negative visibility and increase the positive visibility, so to speak. So I mean, I'm just like Raymond. I'm kind of a curmudgeon sometimes when it comes to change. So I really don't want to, you know, have to deal with the change. But once, you know, once it's been around for 2 years, I won't be upset, I'm sure.
Well, and we had a funny line I just want to mention real quick, Ray, from the chat, from our good friend Excel at Gardens, who's kind of the chat room comic. He says, what we really need, though, is a tournament to get in the tournament. To have a tournament after the tournament to see who will actually win the tournament.
Exactly. Well, it doesn't matter how many teams they put in it. We'll never figure out who the best team is anyway, because one single elimination tournaments don't decide who the best team is, as I always say. So throw as many teams as you want in there, and we'll see who comes out of it. Let's move into a little bit talking about who's going to actually be taking in the draft. Obviously, Parrish Cox is a good player who has some problems. Dez Bryant is a really good player that had one really big problem earlier in the season. And then Zach Robinson's an interesting guy to me. So I want to talk a little bit about Zach Robinson. You know, he's a playmaker. He's a guy that really could have helped his stock if Dez Bryant would have stuck around all year, and he would have put up a little bit better numbers. But he doesn't really have good arm strength. You know, he kind of seems like a college quarterback to me. Still, some people have him being taken. He's definitely going to get picked up as a free agent and try to make a roster next year. You know, how good is Zach Robinson? Does he have the arm strength to make it in the NFL, or do you think he's, you know, the next Chase Daniel?
I've always been a guy who's been very impressed with Zach Robinson. He's made the plays when they matter. I think he helped himself a lot at the Senior Bowl. If you caught any of it, he led a 97-yard drive to end the half that really showed a lot of pocket, you know, a lot of pocket presence, a lot of poise, just good leadership ability. I think that is probably the most understated thing about Zach, is his ability to be in a huddle and lead guys, and that's something that that's really important to any team that's trying to make a run. I think he's a guy that can make plays with his legs and his arm. There are a lot of people that are knocking his arm strength, but there are a lot of guys in the league that really can't throw the ball that far. There are a lot of guys that are looking to get taken first couple rounds, like my boy Colt McCoy, that have about the same arm strength as he does. So I really don't see the knock on his arm strength being that big of a deal. He can make all the passes when he needs to. He's had an NFL-type receiver, Dez Bryant, and he made all the passes with him. I know Dez makes some plays after he gets the ball in his hands, but Dez, you know, Zach had no problem getting the ball to him. So I don't see why it would be a big knock on him.
And about Dez Bryant, I don't know if you've heard any of the rumblings about it, and I know I'm still not familiar with exactly the story. I know that there was some impropriety, but maybe he was just naive in the impropriety. Is this? Do you think it's going to hurt his draft, or have NFL scouts said this is no big deal? We're going to take him as early as we can get him.
Well, what happened? The Dez Bryant situation was a massive, massive cluster. I mean, What happened, he thought that the dealings he had with Deion Sanders were a violation, a major violation that would cost him major playing time. At most, anything he did was a minor violation. The issue came up when he told the NCAA that he hadn't, you know, had any contact with Deion. There was, you know, there's nothing going on there. So that's what the problem was. I think that a lot of people are chalking it up to being a dumb kid who was scared. I mean, they sit you in a room with a bunch of lawyers. I imagine the situation being like those old crappy cop movies where they sit you in a room and there's a light shining on your head and someone's screaming at you. I imagine that's what he felt like when he was in the room with the NCAA official saying, was there an agent there? Did they give you any gifts? Like, he's a kid younger than us that has to deal with that. I would have been scared and probably would have said something wrong. So I really don't think that's going to be a big knock for people. He's been a mature guy, you know, from his time on Oklahoma State. And I think they're just going to chalk it up to a kid who was scared and didn't want to lose his favorite thing in the world, which is playing football.
And then the last guy I really want to talk about is Parrish Cox. And I know we were kind of talking about him before, and you think that this year is the first year he's really turned into an actual corner. Before, he's just a great athlete that made good balls, had good ball skills. But now you're thinking he's an actual corner. And, you know, somebody's probably going to get him in the second round because of some of his off-the-field stuff. And you think they're going to be getting a steal, right?
I have nothing but praise for Parrish Cox. Like you mentioned, we had talked a couple days ago about him. He was a guy that was really known for his speed and his returning abilities. You know, he could play defense because of his speed. But this past year, it was the first year that he really started drawing the tough assignments. When they played Georgia, for instance, and they have that outstanding wide receiver Green, he was the guy that matched up on him. And if you watched the game, he pretty much shut the guy down. I mean, granted, it was a whole defensive effort, but you didn't hear Green's name mentioned a whole lot. So I really think anybody that picks up Parrish Cox is not only going to get a great cornerback that can become one of these shutdown guys that puts you on an island because just of his flat-out speed. At the worst-case scenario, you get a guy you can plug in a five-cornerback set, and a guy that can return punts and kicks. So I think second, third round, the guy's a great value pick. Great. I hate using the word value pick. That was a buzzword a couple years back. But it is when you pick him later than, you know, the first or second round. I really think he's going to be a guy that can change a way a defense plays.
And do you think his off-the-field issues, are they really serious? Is he, you know, I know we've talked a bit about maybe he's not the most intelligent guy. Does he hang out with the wrong people, or is he going to be able to transfer in the NFL okay?
The situation at the bowl game, if you can, you know, there was a Facebook conversation between him and Dez Bryant, actually, that got a lot of that didn't get played up enough. Apparently what the issue was is that he was about a half hour late for curfew on New Year's Eve, and that was the issue that got him sent home from the bowl game. I can't confirm or say that was actually what happened, but that's what he claims happened. So, I mean, it's New Year's Eve. The traffic's going to be terrible. I can see why he might have been late. I think a lot of people, once again, are going to chalk it up to just a guy that was, you know, just out. He's a college kid. I mean, you really can't expect him to be on his P's and Q's all the time. I know I wasn't in college. but I think a lot of people, if they do take that as the biggest knock on him and that someone, he drops to the third round, he's going to prove himself in the next couple of years and earn himself a pretty decent contract.
Well, Gerald, real quick before we let you go, man, and we're talking to Gerald Gooders from OKBlitz.com. Why don't you tell us a little bit about the player profiles that you guys got going on over at OKBlitz? What's that all about, from the Oklahoma State players and Tulsa players? And if people want to read more about that, where they can find it?
Well, you can check it out every day at 4:00. We're in day 3 of a 15-part series that's detailing, you know, the guys. You know, everyone knows who's the stud quarterback next year. Everyone knows who the big hit linebacker. We're doing the guys that are going to be the playmaker guys that you don't already know about. So every day at 4:00, we're dropping 3 new players, one from OU, one from OSU, and one from Tulsa here in state, that are going to be the guys that you should keep an eye on and probably drop their name at the water cooler early in the season and look smart later down the road. So you can check that out at OKBlitz.com. Check out our Twitter, OKBlitz_dot_com. We also have a Facebook page, and feel free to hit up my personal Twitter as well, GH Goodridge. Every day we have a new player, and I'll tweet out links to that, and OKBlitz will tweet out links to that too. So check us out. It's pretty informative stuff. The guys that I'm working with are great, great football minds. Corey DeMoss is the guy who covers OU, and he knows OU inside and out. And the guy who's covering Tulsa actually played at Missouri, so he knows what the heck he's talking about.
Well, hey, Gerald, we appreciate you stopping by, and Ray, you got any parting words for your good partner in crime there?
Thank you very much, Gerald. Always nice to talk to you. You are, as always, a genius.
Thank you guys for the invite. I feel kind of big time now. You guys take it easy.
All right, thanks for joining us, Gerald, man. We'll talk to you later, bud.
Adios.
All right, so that's Gerald Goodridge from OKBlitz.com. You hear him mention some of the things. I always like that, Ray. Throw around the guy's name at the water cooler, because chances are, if you're wrong about him, nobody's going to remember. And if you're right about him, you can probably convince people that you were talking about him. So I'm always a big fan of that strategy. So I like that. So that's you guys want to check that out. He said they cover Oklahoma State, and Tulsa. So if I know that may not be relative for everybody across the entire country, but I have some folks that listen to the show up there. So you guys can check that out at OKBlitz.com, or if you just want to be up and current on all the things going on in Oklahoma, it sounds like a good place to check it out. So we appreciate Gerald stopping by, and everybody else that's been on the show. So Ray had a busy night with a lot of guests, but now we're going to get to the last half hour of the show. It's just going to be me and you and our opinions, so please don't tune out, everybody. We still have some thoughts for you guys on some stuff and some college basketball. We are going to open the phones, though, if you guys want to call up. If you got some stuff you want to talk about, something that the guest mentioned that you want to chime in on, by all means, hit us up at 718-766-4243, and we'll get you on the air to talk about whatever you want to talk about. But before we get that, we want to go really quickly to the What's Your Fantasy scoreboard, and I'm not going to play any clips tonight. We're just going to get right into it. Some of the games that happened tonight in college basketball. Ray, I'm really getting into the college basketball flow of things. I feel like, you know, football's over now, and I was a little sad at the time, but there's been so many really good games on lately. I got a chance to watch some this week. But tonight, we'll talk a little bit about the games we had on tonight. We'll start with the first one was number 4 Purdue at number 9 Ohio State. Purdue jumped out to a 36-23 lead at the half. Ohio State tried to make a game out of it in the second, outscoring the Boilermakers 34-24 in the second half, but in the end, wasn't enough. Ohio State falls 57-60 at home versus Purdue. Juwan Johnson had 24 points for Purdue and also led the team with 7 rebounds. And this now really tightens the Big Ten race between Purdue and Michigan State. Purdue moves to 10-3 in conference, and Michigan State, despite losing 3 more games than Purdue, is 11-3 in the conference, so really tightening up the Big Ten race between Purdue and Michigan State. Another close game tonight, Notre Dame at Louisville. Louisville was up 1 at the half. The game was tied at the end of regulation. After one overtime, still tied. But at the end of two overtimes in Louisville, we finally got a winner. Louisville is getting the much-needed win to keep their tournament bids alive with a 91-89 victory at home over my Fighting Irish. Another game tonight with a team falling behind early was Duke at Miami. They fell behind early, getting outscored 37-25 in the first half. But Miami could not keep that lead, Ray. 22 turnovers in the game. They watched Duke hit 9 of their last 10 free throws in the final minute and a half. Duke erases the 12-point halftime deficit and gets the win on the road at Miami, 81-74. Duke improves to 22-4 on the season. A couple other scores. Final tonight, number 8, West Virginia, 88 at Providence, 74. Number 20, Tennessee, comes back from down 5 at the half, gets a win at home versus Georgia, the final on that one, 69-60. And we mentioned briefly earlier about Texas having a problem with Missouri. That game is now over. Missouri has won 82-77, so big win for Missouri. And Maryland, Ray, down 37-27 at the half, outscores North Carolina State 40-21 in the second half to win 67-58. Oklahoma loses tonight, probably not going to make the tournament at 13-12. They lose to Colorado 77-67. So Blake Griffin not with the Oklahoma Sooners anymore. They're not doing so well. But, Ray, I'll tell you a team who is doing well, and that's our favorite team, the New Jersey Nets, 5-49. They lost tonight, but they won the other night. But they lost tonight 87-84, 5-49 on the season for our New Jersey Nets. And your boys, Ray, I know you're not watching them yet, but Houston 127-99 against Milwaukee tonight. Big win for Houston with Shane Battier, 20 points, 10 rebounds, and 3 assists. So a couple other scores around the NBA. What was that?
I believe that, a couple big NBA stories. I think McGrady is being traded to the Knicks at some point this week, but I just have seen at the bottom of the ESPN screen, has been watching it, that Antoine Jameson got traded to the Cavaliers in a three-team deal. So they're obviously out of the Stoudemire race, and they ended up with Antoine Jameson. That is huge. That makes that team quite a bit better with Jameson in the inside.
All right, well, the only other score I was going to talk about real quick was Utah beating New Orleans 98-90. And this really ticks me off because Chris Paul's kind of having a bit of a down year this year. I'm not sure if he's been injured or what, but I remember whenever Kobe Bryant frankly robbed Chris Paul of the MVP a couple of years ago, and people say, well, Chris Paul's young. He's going to have a chance to win another MVP. You don't ever know what a guy's going to happen to a guy. You can't say that, and I really felt like Chris Paul deserved the MVP that year. I mean, he was playing with guys like David West and other guys that were all-stars that year but have since gone on to nothing. So I really felt bad for Chris Paul that year getting hosed in the MVP voting. But, you know, it happens. But hopefully he can pull it out and we'll see him win one before it's all said and done. But just a reminder again, if you guys want to call up, you can do so at 718-766-4243. And, Ray, as I said, I've kind of transitioned. I know the draft is coming up, but before we get to the draft, March Madness is going to be here, and I'm really, really getting excited for March Madness. I had a chance to sit down and watch a few games this week, and we mentioned it just briefly with Gerald and also with Scott, but this tournament to me this year really feels extremely wide open. You know, you think Syracuse is really good, and then they lose at home to Louisville. And then you think that Villanova is really good. They lose at home to UConn. There's all these teams. Duke was playing very well. They've lost 3 or 4 games. It just this year, to me, when I fill out the bracket, I'm going to have to put a lot more energy into it because I think there will be more chances for upsets this year because we've seen some really good teams, you know, fall. And I think that I know Kentucky's good. I know Kansas is good. I feel like Syracuse is pretty solid. I think Nova's pretty good. Purdue's pretty good. But I just think that whereas last year it felt like maybe 3 or 4 teams could possibly win it, this year to me feels like it's a lot more wide open, and there's probably legitimately 12 to 16 teams that it wouldn't shock me to see walk away with the trophy at the end of the year. I mean, are you getting the same feeling, starting to get in that mood for college basketball, that it's kind of a wide open race this year?
Yeah, I think there are a lot of teams out there that can win, mostly because I don't think there are many teams out there who have proven that they are – you know, that they are great. They're, you know, Purdue, I think, is a really good team, but Purdue, you know, lost those 3 games in the middle of the season, just lost 3 games in a row, one of them to, you know, Northwestern, who's lost all their chance of making it to the Big Dance tonight. So it wasn't even the good teams. They just lost those games. Michigan State, I think, is a good team, but they've struggled. Texas, I think, is a good team, but they've struggled. I think that Kansas is very good. I think that Kentucky is very good. But, you know, there are other teams out there, like Vanderbilt, who's a scary team, and a lot of the Big East teams, which are scary teams. So it's interesting to me. I think that this year, as we move on, there aren't many games left. Most of them have about five games left. But after we get through the conference tournaments, I think we'll start to really figure out who are the best teams. Duke, you know, can they really be dominant? They look like they have a bit of a better team than they had last year. But I think that the problem that we're going to have is that there are probably 12, 13 teams that I look at and say, right now, I think they can win the tournament. It could change as we move on, but there are at least two teams from every big conference except the Pac-10, which is just awful, that I think has a chance to win.
All right, well, we've got a caller from Skype, so I have no idea where they're calling from, so we'll go to the phones and hopefully we don't get banked. Caller from Skype here on What's Your Fantasy with Jared Free and Raymond Summerlin. What's going on tonight?
Hey, what's going on?
Who we got tonight, man?
My name's John Mahaffey, Oregon.
All right, nice call tonight, John.
Yeah, what my fantasy is a girl with a big fat ass taking a shit all over my mouth.
Okay, that's fantastic. All right. So that's very interesting. I have no idea who that was, but sounds like he's friends with LeGarrette Blount. I don't know. I don't know who that was. Anyways, hopefully he's not friends with LeGarrette Blount. But hope you guys in the chat enjoyed that. For y'all on the podcast, we do apologize. It's a risky take when you take Skype calls. We do have friends of the program that like to call in via Skype sometimes. And then we like to have D-bags like that like to call in and think that stuff like that's funny. So Exotic Gardens is getting a big kick in the chat. So maybe one of his dear, close, and personal friends. We hope not. Anyways, back to college basketball talk. We do apologize if there were children listening. Najee Davenport is Fantasy Exchange says. Apparently, I guess that's who it was. We can now say we've had our first NFL player on the show. That was Najee Davenport calling from Oregon. Likes to grow tails in people's closets. Anyways, before we get too off topic here with all of that, I just wanted to mention some of the games that are coming up this week for NCAA basketball. Tomorrow night, Ray, I usually sit down and watch me some Office and Parks and Recreation. I'm going to let the TiVo take care of that. Probably spend some time on the other network.
There will be no Office or Parks and Recreation because of the Olympics.
Oh, because of the Olympics. So that is a little bit depressing. If you guys don't watch Parks and Recreation, I have to say that I used to be a huge Office fan. I almost feel like the Office has kind of run its course. I think that they're kind of doing the same storylines they were doing 2 years ago, just with different people. It's getting a little played out. I really do like, I don't know why I can't remember, Steve Carell. I always want to call him Michael Scott, but Steve Carell is still good on that show, but it just seems like some of the storylines are getting a little played out. Parks and Rec has been fabulous. I don't know the guy's name, but whoever plays Tom Haverford on that show is absolutely fantastic. And the guy that plays Amy Poehler's boss, also fantastic. Really, really good show. If you guys don't watch, you should check it out on Hulu or something like that. I'm sure it's available. But tomorrow night, I will be spending my time at the Four Letter Network. Two games, great games back-to-back. First, you got number 5 Syracuse at number 10 Georgetown. That starts at 7 Eastern on ESPN. Should be a really good game. As we mentioned, you know, Syracuse has had their ups and downs as well as Georgetown, but that's always a good game when those two get together. And the other game, a team that may or may not be a bubble team, talking about Marquette. We talked about them beating South Florida over the weekend. They're going to be playing at home against Pittsburgh, who Pittsburgh's shown that they can be beat. They lost to South Florida at home. That game was at South Florida, and some other ones they've lost as well. So that'll be another good game, number 19 Pitt at Marquette. That starts at 9 Eastern on ESPN. So those are two games I'm looking forward to. And then Saturday, get a few more good games, Ray. You got Kansas State, who's been hot. They're playing at Oklahoma. Maybe Oklahoma can get hot and pull the upset. I doubt it. You've also got Georgia Tech and Maryland. That should be a good game. You've got Kentucky at Vanderbilt, Ray. This should be a very good game. Vanderbilt's been playing very well. That game's on later on, I think 6 Eastern on ESPN or CBS, I'm not sure which. But what do you give Vandy any chance at knocking off Kentucky when they come a calling on Saturday night?
Definitely. They've been playing really well. They've got a good team. We've kind of seen this coming for a couple of years out of Vanderbilt. That's a program on the rise, going in the right direction. They, you know, picked a good conference to do it in. The SEC definitely doesn't have the pedigree of an ACC or a Big East. So they're on the rise. I think they've got a good team. And, you know, Kentucky has shown at times that they're, you know, they can be beaten. And so I think that Vanderbilt definitely has a good shot to go in there and win it.
That'll be interesting. I'll be interested to see what the spread comes out on that game. I will definitely get some Twitter action on that if I get a lot of points with Vandy. I should have bet Texas A&M the other night against Kansas. I thought that them getting Texas A&M plus 7 at home against Kansas was a little high because Texas A&M's been playing pretty well. They could have won that game. They didn't. Kansas kind of turned it up later on in that game and took care of business, but that was an interesting game, plus 7. I think the final, they won by 5, I think Kansas did. So might have made you a little nervous at the end. One thing I did want to get to, though, before I forget, Ray, real fast, is that, Ray, real quick, what, should we take that as a compliment that we're getting prank calls? I mean, are we getting big, or is that just embarrassing? I don't know what to think of that whole thing.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, obviously someone took the time out of their busy schedule of picking up hilarious things to call in. So I suppose that means we're getting big. You know, it's funny, I've been watching the ESPN coverage of the Olympics, and I enjoy the Olympics. I don't know what that's about. I really do enjoy the Olympics, and three Americans won gold medals today, Sean White, Lindsey Vonn, and Shawnee Davis, who's second, his first man to ever win consecutive golds in the 100-meter speed skating. So take that, Bryant Gumbel, for complaining about the lack of African-Americans in Winter Olympics. Two by Shawnee Davis. There you go. But anyway, I think that it's funny. I've been watching ESPN coverage of it at night. I think that NBC has some type of problem with ESPN because, you know, maybe NBC has a soul. And it's funny when you watch the coverage, they just show still pictures. They don't show really any video of the actual event, or they show video from you know, past events with the people in it. It's very, very humorous how ESPN's trying to get around this idea that apparently they're having some riff with NBC, which I just enjoy more.
Well, I think it's actually a legal thing. I think when the network that gets the Olympics, nobody else is allowed to show anything, no video,
really?
No anything. Yeah, I think that's a legal thing, and that's why. I remember somebody was talking about this a couple of weeks ago. They were saying that it's kind of different with the Olympics because it's not like, you know, NBA or football or anything else. No one is allowed to show video of anything at the Olympics. So you will see the stuff on other NBC-owned networks. You know, your CNBC, your MSNBC, some of these other ones. USA, I think, is owned by NBC. But
Bravo.
You will not see any Olympic coverage on any other network, and that's a legal thing. That's like an exclusivity clause in the contracts when they bid on the Olympics. It's just it's just tied to that one thing.
See,
so I don't think it has to do with the riff. It's more ESPN doesn't want to get sued, so that's why they may even be pushing the envelope showing the pictures, but I'm not sure. But I do remember hearing something about that a couple weeks ago, and I will admit I'm not a big Olympic watcher. My wife is TiVo'd every hour of every single event, and she watches it. She's keeping me up till all hours of the night watching the Olympic coverage while I'm trying to sleep. So, but yeah, I think there's a deal with that, them showing the pictures and no video.
Olympics are fantastic, and the curling, I really love curling. Curling is a fantastic game. It's not a sport, but it's a fantastic game. I mean, it's just the idea that you're just sliding stones down ice. It's just fantastic. Like, why? Why are you sliding stones down ice? Just because. Because you're rich and have the money to do so. What's better than that?
That's a good question. I've never been a big fan of the Olympics. I don't really get into it. I don't think my sports tree has enough branches to include the Olympics, winter or summer. But that's just me. I did want to mention this, too, before I forget. We didn't get a chance to talk about this because Ray was ill last week and wasn't able to join the show. So much again thanks to Joe Everett from the Fantasy Exchange for filling in. You know him and love him as Go-Go Broncos. We do appreciate him for filling in for us last year. I wanted to recap our betting sheets. It was the first annual What's Your Fantasy, What to Bet and Watch on the Super Bowl. We tried to have several different bets. I had tried to have some that spanned the entire game, some that would happen at the beginning. Ray got off to a hot start, man. On my card, my first bet was the national anthem over a minute 42. That was easily hit. I think Carrie Underwood hit almost 2 minutes. So I won that one. That was an even money bet, 10 wins, 10. And we did this based on $10 bets just to keep it, you know, simple for everybody. So it would have been $100 totally bet. Then the coin toss, I had heads. It was heads. I was off to a great start, which I automatically knew meant that probably none of the rest of my bets were going to hit, because anytime I get off to a hot start, I usually crash and burn. Bet number three, though, did hit. Pierre Garçon's over under 62.5 receiving yards. He did go over that. The rest of my bets did not do so good. You know, the member of the Who did not smash their guitar stage, although I should have bet the windmill move because he went to town on that. And
he crushed that windmill. He hit like 50.
Yeah, easily. Yeah, he easily killed that. So we could have won some money on that, but didn't. But overall, Ray, out of the 10 bets that I made, I won 4. Some of them had better odds than others. So if you bet $100 on all of them, you would have got $78.43 back. The one bet that I hit that was quite positive was over under team field goals over 3. That was at plus 115. That was the best odds I had on anything. So all up, if you bet $10 on every one of my cards, you lost $21.57. For that, I apologize. I promise to do better next year. Some of the bets I had that I lost was the Colts point spread minus 5.5. Obviously, that didn't happen. The point spread going over 60.5. That was a little bit of a long shot. Didn't happen. Will there be a scoreless quarter? Ray and I both like that. Did not happen, although I think there were 3 quarters in which one of the teams didn't score, so we weren't too far off of that. A team scoring 3 unanswered times, New Orleans beat that, so I lost that one. And the final game total, I had bet that it would be odd, although I wrestled severely with that. I thought it would be even, but the more I did the research, the numbers kind of say that it would be odd. I took odd, and, of course, it was wrong. So I didn't do too well, Ray. I won 4 out of my 10. How did you do on your Super Bowl betting card?
I did worse. I won 3 out of my 10. One of them I won was both teams would make field goals over 33 yards. That is plus 170. Also, at last score of the first half, not a touchdown, plus 125. I hit the under 57, so I got plus 10. I missed on the point spread. I missed on the scoreless quarter. I missed on total sacks, over 3.5. I think there was only 1 sack in the game. Drew Brees was just playing way, way too good. I had no team will score 3 straight times. I had missed that. Colts punt before Colts score, that missed. Number of players to have a pass attempt over 2.5. That missed. I was very upset about that. I thought there has to be a trick play. It's a Super Bowl. There has to be a trick play. And I also bet that there would be a safety, which got plus 800 yards. I was praying for it. Just couldn't happen. So if you bet online, you lost $30. That sucks. But they were just all stupid prop bets. And
yeah, it's fun. I mean, and, you know, if you would have won, Ray had a lot more long shot bets. You really only needed to hit on one of those weird bets, and he would have cashed out big. So I think that's what you want. You want to take a few long shots. You have some fun. I mean, and if you lose $30, hey, there's plenty of people that blow that in a bar in a couple of hours. So, you know, you're not out much. Hopefully it was a good time. And like I said, it was our first annual. We got off to a slow start, so we will definitely try to amp that up for next year and make sure that everybody cashes in a big way in the following season. So I would open up the phone lines if it's someone I recognize, if it's a good friend of the program, Walkie or Joe or anyone like that, want to call in real quick to talk about something they heard from Wes or anything else. We'll take those calls. If I see a Skype call, sorry, not going to get back on the show tonight, with all due respect to whatever that guy's name was from Oregon. I missed his name. I'm sure it was something foul, too, if we go back and listen to it again. So we'll see about that. But the other thing I wanted to talk about, too, is the other day I wanted to get a little action on the side on some NCAA basketball. I looked at the West Virginia Pitt game. I wanted to take West Virginia minus 3, but I'm looking at it and I'm saying, well, you know, they're on the road. I kind of questioned myself. My 3-year-old son, Trevor, is walking by, and I look at him and I say, hey, Trevor, who's going to win tonight, West Virginia or Pitt? He says Pitt. So I say, well, what have I got to lose? So I take the Pitt money line at plus 135, turn the game on in the second half. I think it's about 10 minutes to go. Pitt's down by like 8. So I'm like, well, you know, that's what I get for listening to a 3-year-old when I decide to make bets. But Pittsburgh came back, what do you know, defeated West Virginia in triple overtime. A great game that I did not get to see the end of because I wasn't paying any attention to it. I just happened to get on to Bodog and saw I had more money in my account. Didn't realize why. Went to check and see and saw that Pittsburgh came back and won in triple overtime. So I thought something fun for maybe for us to do. I've kind of got away from the streak for the cash, although I've started back up. I just realized I suck at it, taking like 98% odds in the Olympics for a guy to win a medal and then he doesn't when he was like a clear-cut favorite to win gold. But that's just kind of how it goes. So I thought, well, what maybe me and Ray should do is we're going to pick one betting matchup a day. And we're going to pit Ray versus myself versus my 3-year-old son, Trevor, versus a coin. And every day I'm going to pick one betting matchup. It'll be either NBA, NCAA, or NHL. I will tweet out the picks, Ray's picks, my picks, the coin pick, and my son's pick via our main Twitter feed at WYF Show. We're going to start tomorrow, Thursday, February 18th, and we'll see who does the best over the next 30 days, and then you can bet accordingly. We'll see if I can beat Ray or if me and Ray will both get shown up by a three-year-old in a coin. That's what I think is going to happen. It just seems like when I try to use my brain, I don't do so well. So we're going to have Twitter picks every day, Ray versus Jared versus my son Trevor, the three-year-old, versus the coin. I will flip the coin for all matchups, and we will post those before the games. Ray, what are your predictions for who is going to win this little Twitter challenge between me, you, my three-year-old son, and the coin?
Well, your son and I have a bit of a running feud because he crushed me at Wii Baseball. Just crushed me at Wii Baseball. Apparently, he is familiar with the proper wrist technique in Wii Baseball that I have yet to figure out. And so we have a bit of a, let's say we have a bit of a running feud. I don't think I'm going to let him beat me. I don't think that's going to happen.
Well, the chat room, G-Money says he's got his money on Trevor, and appreciate him for spelling that right. I don't know how that name gets misspelled, but Fantasy Exchange also says, LOL, same here, G. Trevor is easily the odds-on favorite in this competition. So I'm not going to make Trevor pick straight-up winners because he doesn't understand the spread. So I'll just, when I ask him if it's West Virginia or Pitt, I'll be having him, you know, pick with the points. That way he has a better chance of being right some of the times because there's a good chance to pick, you know, very, very heavy underdogs all the time and not really understand what he's doing. So if he does pick, it's always going to be with points or giving up points. So we'll do that, and we'll Twitter start that out tomorrow. I haven't picked the game yet, but once I have it, we'll get it from Ray, and you guys can look forward to following that. I'll have daily scoring updates at the end of the night. Who's ahead, me, Ray, the coin, or Trevor? And it's going
to
be
scared
very
of that coin, to be perfectly honest with you. You had a run when you were doing Streak for the Cash with the coin. That was very, very scary. The coin knows all.
Yeah, we will see if it does. But final 10 minutes of the show, and again, we just want to thank Wes Bunting from the National Football Post who joined us in the first segment tonight, and also Scott Carter for stopping by from TBO.com and the Tampa Tribune. Also does some work for, I believe it's WFLA-TV in Tampa as well, and then Gerald Goodrich from OKBliss.com. Guys, do us all a favor. If you don't follow those guys on Twitter, you can hit them up at Wes Bunting, and you can hit Gerald Goodrich up at GH Goodrich. And I'm just trying to pull it up real quick here because it's kind of a different one for the Scott. To follow Scott, if you want to know everything that's going on with the USF Bulls, he'll be at Pro Days and other things like that. You can follow him. It's TBO_USF_Bulls. So if you want to keep up on what's going on with the USF Bulls and follow Scott, we appreciate all those guys stopping by with us. I'm hoping that Wes is going to be like a biweekly guest for us, so if you like what Wes has. And if you ever want to email questions for Wes, we can pass those on, and we can get them answered on the show. You can always email us at wyfshow@gmail.com or whatsyourfantasyshow@gmail.com, whichever you prefer. It doesn't matter to me. I check them both semi-regularly. But anything you wanted to add real quick, Ray? I know you're getting kind of into the college basketball stuff. Or are you more ready for the draft right now?
I'm more ready for the draft. What I'm really ready for is what's happening on Friday with Tiger Woods. I am quite intrigued by what his statement is going to say. What do you say to people when you've been gone basically for, what is it, 2.5 months now since Thanksgiving? He's been just gone, just non-existent, and he's just going to show back up and make a statement. There have been rumors flying. He didn't even address the rumors at all. He didn't say if he was in sex rehab. His wife's staying at Brett Favre's house. I mean, this is a really, really, really odd story that is going on right now, and you're like, what is he going to say? What can he say? Is there anything he can say that makes this less weird?
I really don't know. Somebody said he's going to announce his retirement. I said, that's not going to happen. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, you hear different stories that his wife and him flew back together from his sex rehab. Then I heard he came out and said that sex rehab is a joke, which I don't understand how you sex rehab doesn't – sex addiction doesn't make any sense to me. I think you –
I'm a male.
By a lot of people for that, exactly. So I don't know exactly what that's all about. But I did want to say something real fast before I forget. John Carson is asking in the chat, he's to test this theory, because he's always heard the theory that if you just go against public perception, you'll win more than you'll lose. Do you remember the website, Ray, that I remember looking at it during the playoffs? It would tell you which side of games people are taking. It was something with...
I can't remember the name of it. It's like Moneyline.com or something like that. It was something.
I'll have to see if I can see if I can pull that. I might be able to pull that up off of something. I will work on finding that for you, JC. If you just give me a few minutes, I might be able to pull that up. But yeah, it was interesting to see that Tiger Woods is going to have a news conference. I know it's going to be over televised. I know I'm going to hear way more about it than I want to all day Friday. So. I mean, I don't really know what you hope to accomplish by doing that. I mean, I guess he has to do it. It's kind of like, you know, Mark McGwire became the hitting coach for the St. Louis Cardinals. He kind of had to come out and say something. You know, he had to address it, because if he didn't, they were going to get asked about it forever. And so I think that, you know, it was a wise move on his part to come out and just say something. So, I mean, we all knew he's going to have to do it, but it's like you said, I don't know what he's going to say. I have no idea what he's going to talk about that's going to make this thing not seem any weirder than it is. I mean, I can't imagine his wife is going to stay with him after everything that she knows that that he did, and God knows he probably did more than she knows. But, yeah, I'm not real sure how that situation shakes out. But it's going to be interesting television. I don't know that I'm going to be glued to it. I'm sure I'm going to hear, like I said, way more about it than I want to. So we'll see what happens with that. But I did want to mention one other thing too, real fast, about the Super Bowl, and that is that I had said way before the playoffs had started that the Colts, only the 2004, I think, Patriots had won with 3.5 rushing yards or less, and sure enough, the Colts lose the Super Bowl as well. So if you can't run the ball, which is weird because they ran the ball very well in that game, but not looking good for you if you can't get the ball running. I remember tweeting out that stat, and G Money had some choice things to say about it, saying that he thought that he needed a better stat than that. But you know what? It kind of worked out. So that was kind of interesting there.
That game was such a weird game. I still, when I sit and I think about that game, I think, you know, the Saints shouldn't have won that football game. Like, at what point, other than Drew Brees, were they the best team on that field? I just can't think of a time when they were. Like, Drew Brees, it seems like Drew Brees won that Super Bowl. They were not the best team on that field. They just weren't. If you watch that game, they were not the best team. It's just that Peyton Manning throws an interception that they take back. It was a huge play, obviously. And the Colts didn't make that big play. And I'm not taking anything away from the Saints. But at what point of that game did you watch that game and think, oh, yeah, New Orleans is better than Indianapolis? Because I didn't do it at any point. And it just proves my point once again that rarely – in single elimination tournaments, does the best team win? Rarely does it happen, and I don't think it happened this year in the NFL. And you know, it didn't happen last year, and it didn't happen the year before that, and it's not going to happen next year. So it's just an interesting game. I mean, I might be totally off base, and other people might not agree with me, but it just doesn't seem like the Saints were the better team.
Yeah, and me and Joe talked about that when you bowed out on us on being sick, but the Saints realistically shouldn't have been there with over Minnesota. I mean, Minnesota had their worst game of the season, turned the ball over 6 times, and then realistically still could have won the game if they had won the coin toss in overtime, or if they would have stopped New Orleans, or if Brett Favre went through a pick. I mean, first and 10 from the 33 with the ball, you have to think that game is over. So very interesting that in those two situations. But, you know, I don't want to say that it was fate or anything else. This is why New Orleans won. I mean, they played it seemed to me at the start of the game, and this is what I said about it, it seemed to me at the start of the game that the Colts came out to win that game with a plan, and the Saints were just kind of happy to be there. That very quickly changed when it seemed like the Saints pulled out all the stops, realizing this is the last game of the season. We're going to pull out all the bells and whistles, everything we have left. We're going to put it all on the line to win this game, and that's exactly what they did. And, hey, they came up a winner. But I think, Ray, you know, seven times out of 10, 8 times out of 10, you don't get that same result making those types of play calls. And hopefully people aren't going to follow Sean Payton's game plan as a blueprint, because I think it was kind of a one-offy, fluky thing that worked that day. I don't think it's something that's going to work on a week-to-week basis in the NFL.
I don't know. It seemed like, you know, that play, they got the onside kick, which – they didn't get, by the way, off of initially. They got it in the scrum underneath, which obviously still means they got it, but they did not have that ball initially. You know, and they ended up getting it, ended up making a good choice for Sean Payton. But it's just, I don't know. As I watched that game, and I did watch it, it just didn't seem like they were the best team. And, you know, it's disappointing because, and it was disappointing when the Patriots lost, even though I hate the Patriots, because they were the better team. And it was disappointing when the Titans lost, even though I love the Titans, when they lost the Ravens, because the Titans were a better team. It's just a disappointing thing about football. It's because of the kind of game it is. You can't play series, and so you really don't find the best team, you know, in a single elimination tournament. And it's kind of a disappointing part of it, but, you know, some people really like that. I quite dislike it. I would rather see the best team win. But, you know, I guess that's how it goes.
All right, well, we've got 30 seconds to wrap it up here. We appreciate everybody for tuning in tonight. Again, thanks to Wes Bunting, to Scott Carter, and to Gerald Gooders for joining us tonight. We'll work on some more guests for next week. If not, it'll just be me and Ray talking lots of college football and lots of college basketball as we get ready for the upcoming NFL draft and March Madness. So for the two of us, that's going to do it for tonight. Stay tuned on the Fantasy Sports Channel for the replay of hour number one of Smash Mouth Wednesdays. It's Taz, it's Tony Cincotta, and it's coming up next. Thanks for everybody for tuning in, and we'll see you guys next week.